Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good evening, all, and welcome into another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Let's see, I'm trying to think. This is our eighth, I believe. Seventh, I guess, for this current season, as we're going to spend the next little more than an hour or so, and we're going to take a look at the week that was in the NFL. Week 7 just went by us here, and, well, that kind of just sets the table for us to start to kind of get ready for the week to come. Week 8 starts up tomorrow night. And as I look around here, there's a couple of things that jump off the page at me that I can tell you right now we are definitely going to be getting into. And one of them is the, well, did a little research here. Tremendous number of teams with two wins or less. An awful lot of them. In fact, we've got a whopping 12 teams right now that have two wins or less right now in the league. Just wondering, how does that compare to, say, even just last year? Well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a couple of big games that took place this past weekend. Hey, listen, it was a little bit of a weak card, in my opinion. Not the greatest matchups in the world, but there were a couple of games there that certainly had an impact, and there were a couple of surprises. We'll get into a little bit of that. We'll also get into a little bit of chatting about, well, who might be some of the coaches sitting on the hot seat right now as we are looking at an exorbitant number of teams, well, as I just pointed out, with two wins or less. If anybody out there wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. You can get a hold of us here at the Frat House Sports Radio Network, 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and you're Skype capable, well, just hit the Skype button. It'll put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can hit us up in the chat room right there on Blog Talk Radio. You can leave us a message there. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. I'll be sending out our weekly Twitter poll here momentarily. Joining me as always, and I couldn't do this without him, to get through some of the stats and all of the implications of much of this, Brandon.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you, 12 teams with two wins or less. Now, to give you an idea, and you know, let's just run it down for a moment. We have three teams right now with one win: the Ravens, the Titans, and the Lions. Two of those jump off at me: Ravens and Lions. They were a surprise. I don't think anybody was expecting them to only have one win going into Week 8. In preseason, when we were all doing the roundtable, I don't think anybody expected that. But nonetheless, we've got three teams right now with one win. We have nine with only two wins: the Browns, the Texans, the Jaguars, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Cowboys, Bears, Buccaneers, and 49ers. I guess a couple of those jump off there. Cowboys certainly do, but of course they've been injury plagued. You know, that's certainly why they're sitting at the two threshold. The Chargers certainly jump off there. I don't think anybody, well, I don't know, maybe some people did expect the Bears to be just that bad. You know, the Buccaneers are a team that's rebuilding. Texans the same way. Browns the same way. Jaguars. So 49ers, I don't know. Last year at this time, believe it or not, the 49ers had four wins.
Wow.
What do you make of this?
Well, I think there's a big gap between the really good teams and the really bad teams. I mean, I think it's that simple. I mean, how often do we have 5-6-0 teams at the same time? I mean, that's what we're at right now. We have 5 teams sitting at 6-0. So, you know, I think you're going to offset that with some, you know, you got to have some on the other end of the spectrum. So I think the way I'm seeing it is there's a big disparity between the, you know, top 8, 10 teams and the bottom, you know, 10, 12 teams, you know, right now. And I think, you know, some of that can be explained, as you just pointed out, like the Cowboys have a lot of injury problems, obviously. You know, the Texans have had a rotating door quarterback, and they just rotated one right off the team, which was interesting. Anyway, so, you know, I think a lot of it can be, you know, looked at as and sort of explained. I mean, things like the Ravens being 1-6, the Ravens and Lions being 1-6, I think that's, you know, skewing the numbers a little, because I don't think anybody expect them to any of those two teams to be that bad
right
at this point. So, you know,
there's a few
surprises.
Yeah. Last year, to give you an idea, last year at this very time, last year right now, at this moment, we had 7 teams with, well, let's put it this way. We had 7 teams with 0 wins or less. The Raiders still hadn't gotten a win at this point going into week 8 last year. In the NFL, we had 3 teams with only 1 win, the Buccaneers, the Jaguars, and the Jets. And we had 3 teams with just 2 wins, the Falcons, the Rams, and the Titans. So we had a total of 7 versus 12. And yet the NFL has prided itself for many, many, I would have to say well over a decade now, the NFL has prided itself on its ability to have, well, we hear the word all the time, that word that sometimes a lot of us really, really like and then some of us really, really hate, and that's that word parity. I mean, is this an anomaly? Or are we seeing, are we looking at the potential of going back to the years of the dynasties? Because when you look at some of the unbeaten teams, you got Denver in there, you got you've got your Patriots in there. I mean, those two teams right there have to kind of be considered, you know, modern day current juggernauts. You know, some would argue perhaps maybe the Broncos aren't really all that this year, but I don't know. You know, who else is in there at 6-0? Well, the Panthers had an off year. Well, the Packers. Are the Packers a dynasty? Or are the Packers a modern era dynasty? I don't know. Is it ever possible we would find ourselves going back to the era of the dynasties?
Well, possibly. I don't know that you're ever going to see a dynasty in the sense of the Pittsburgh Steel Curtain dynasty, the 49ers of the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. I don't know, because teams can't keep, you know, in today's NFL that many stars together anymore. So, but you do see others. I mean, we've seen the Patriots and the Packers, you know, some of these teams that have been winning a lot rotate some of their players. I mean, the Patriots and Packers have different receivers every year, it seems like. You know, they manage to, you know, running backs change. Now the Packers have been pretty consistent with that lately with Starks and Lacy, but, you know, other than, you know, I think you're going to see a different kind of dynasty, maybe a shorter time, you know, dynasty, you know, than compared to, you know, the former way the NFL ran. But there's clearly the word parity, I don't think, describes the NFL at the given moment. I think right now there is a big difference between the tops and the bottoms, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. The you know, a lot of us, and again, I mean, you know, there's a yin and a yang to everything. You know, the monopoly busting vehicle that was used was free agency. As you point out, one of the major reasons why we don't see the dynasties any longer. You know, while people complain about free agency and what it's done to salaries, free agency has been completely responsible for the fact that, well, you can go from a year where you get a team like the Baltimore Ravens winning the Super Bowl to the very next year it being who won it right after the Baltimore Ravens? You know, was it the 40? Yeah.
No, it wasn't the 49ers.
Well,
no, it wasn't the 49ers.
But let me say this.
Let me say this.
I mean, but it's the reason why you can have one year, you could have the New Orleans Saints win the next year, you could have the Baltimore Ravens win the very next year, you could go back and have the New England Patriots win. It's because of the free agency. The free agency became the monopoly buster of the 70s, the 80s, and the, I guess, really, and somewhat the early 90s, because you had the kind of, you had a little mini dynasty, I guess, going in there with the Dallas Cowboys. It's just an interesting phenomenon to me to see this many teams, though, right now, that really, and I mean, that's what's making, in some respects, that's what's making, you know, as I started out the show, I said, you know, well, you know, last week's card was kind of, I mean, it was, You know, we sit here and we've got to make up choices each week for, you know, what are going to be our picks of the week for our Thursday night Frat House Sports Show. And sometimes it gets difficult because, you know, you got a 3-4 team going up against a, you know, a 4-3 team. And you're going, well, it's not terribly compelling. Yeah, but it is, because there's still significance to it, despite the fact the records are not terribly good. So it's an interesting phenomena we are seeing right now in the NFL. As you point out, still what? How many? Five teams that are unbeaten. The New England Patriots, Cincinnati Bengals, Denver Broncos, Green Bay Packers, and the Carolina Panthers, all 6-0. Atlanta Falcons have 6 wins, but they have the 1 loss. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, some of that's going to change this week, though.
Yep, we know that.
Because the Broncos play the Packers, so one of them is going to lose, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
Along the way.
We know that's going to change. Now, that kind of ties in a little bit, and let me just pull it up here. It ties in a little bit to the, I guess maybe we can just touch on it real quick. It ties in a little bit to the power rankings. I guess the most amazing thing to me that jumped off the power rankings when I took a look at them, I guess this afternoon, Brad, where in the world did the Minnesota Vikings come from at number 8?
Well, they've been pretty consistent.
This is the USA Today power rankings, okay? So we go, you know, the power rankings really didn't change at the top. New England, Green Bay, Cincinnati, Carolina, 1, 2, 3, 4. Denver didn't play last week. They're number 5. Arizona's at 6. Atlanta Falcons at 7. Minnesota Vikings at 8. They moved up 3 spots. Jets at 9. Steelers dropped 4 spots to number 10. Seattle moved up 2 spots to number 11. The St. Louis Rams are still in there at number 12, at 3-3. Minnesota Vikings. I don't know. Are they? Is this a team we should be sitting up and taking notice of?
I think so. I think we kind of alluded to that a little bit last year. I mean, you know, Bridgewater had a nice rookie year. I think he's improving as he goes. He still is not a mistake-prone quarterback. He doesn't throw a ton of interceptions. He doesn't do stuff on the field like a Jay Cutler to hurt his team. You know, he's pretty consistent. And, you know, the Vikings are a run-first team. I mean, even Adrian Peterson's starting to come back to form. He's had a couple decent games. So, yeah, I'm not really and if you take into account the division they're in, I mean, between the Lions and the Bears, you know, it's not hard to be, you know, number two in that crop right now. So, you know, they're in a pretty good spot right now. And I think, you know, maybe they keep it up. They may sneak into the playoffs as a wild card. Who knows? I don't necessarily see it right now, but it could happen.
It's a little early.
Exactly. I don't see them, you know, I mean, 4-2 is not a bad place to be in the NFC, you know. I mean, clearly the South is going to give you one wild card as things sit right now. But from there, it's pretty muddy. You know, technically, if you look at it right now, they are the second wild card as it sits today in the NFC.
There was an interesting observation made in USA Today, which I just wanted to bring up with regard to Adrian Peterson. Let me just take a look real quick. I just wanted to see what his – right now he's ranked fourth in the league in running back statistics with 530 yards. Devonta Freeman still sitting atop of that list with 621. But an interesting little note that sometimes could get easily overlooked. Adrian Peterson this past Sunday, and we're going to talk about this game here momentarily. We'll jump into this Minnesota. In fact, why don't we do that? Let's jump over to the Minnesota Vikings. We'll make that game one that we're going to take a look at here real quick. Game one with Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota Vikings went to Detroit, and, you know, every game right now, a must game for Detroit. Detroit goes in. Detroit's hosting a game at home. They're 1-5 as of last week. You got to think that in some respects, they're still kind of thinking, okay, maybe we can turn this season around. Maybe we can turn this season around. So what does Detroit need? Detroit badly needs a win. Take themselves to 2-5. Do they get it? No, they don't. Minnesota Vikings come out 28-19. They beat them. Teddy Bridgewater, we've pointed it out. He's not having a season that's like, you know, knock your socks off, but, hey, he's holding his own. And he did on Sunday, 25 of 35, 316 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Good job. Don't turn the ball over. That's always a good thing. 59.9 QB rating. Now, Peterson had 98 yards on the ground on 19 carries. Therein comes a little bit of the deceptive figure because one of those runs was for 75 yards. So the interesting note that USA Today pointed out was that if you remove that 75-yard run, Adrian Peterson right now is averaging 1.9 yards per carry over the last 2 weeks. So while right now people might be, you know, and look, I mean, I guess if we simply look at box scores and you go and look at the leaders in the league and you see Adrian Peterson sitting at the number 4 spot, you're going, excuse me, AP's having a pretty good year coming back. But really, over the past 2 weeks, not as good as everybody might think. One of those little hidden numbers. Go ahead.
You know what? I'll dispute that article.
Go ahead.
In this sense, that 75-yard run ended up in a touchdown. And when a running back breaks a run like that, it didn't end up in a touchdown. It was close. When a running back breaks a long run like that, that puts the defense on its heels. That makes them watch for the next run a lot more and frees up the passing game. So, yeah, okay, it may be a little deceptive, you know, but if you add the value of that big run into the hole, I think it helps the offense. So I think that's why they look at yards per carry as a barometer, not necessarily that you're getting 5-6 yards every time you touch the ball. But if you average that throughout the course of the game, you're doing the job you need to put the defense, you know, on alert and make them honor the run instead of, you know, just covering everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I think even though the 1-9, it's not fair to say if you take out the big run, because that big run has a big impact on the course of the game. In my opinion.
Okay, but I could make the argument the complete opposite, and that is that when you remove the one big run or the occasional big runs for any running back, what is the consistency? And the consistency is what the defense needs to be addressing. And the consistency of the running game right now, according to the statistic, is that Adrian Peterson is a 1.9, a 2 yard, basically 2 yards, 2 yards per carry runner over the past couple of weeks. That's what the stat tells you. That's what the defense then would be preparing for. And I think in some respects that is accurate because, you know, listen, we've seen it a zillion times, Brandon. It doesn't matter how bad a quarterback might be. A quarterback could be one of the worst quarterbacks in the world. At least once a game, he's going to have one long throw down the field that everybody's going to sit there and go, holy smokes, where did that come from? Well, the same thing's going to be true of a running back. You know?
Not necessarily, though, but I would dispute the fact. You know what? If I'm Adrian Peterson and the Vikings and they're going to, you know, not worry about me because I'm only getting 1.9 a carry and discount that, he's going to take that next team and he's going to break 23 times on them. You watch. That's just the way it goes.
Well,
you know, I think a guy like Peterson, you know, they're going to focus on him no matter what. And I think,
obviously, I think, you know, any team is going to, right.
Right. And I think that's part of why you see him having issues to a degree. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. We will. Because one of our favorite people, I think, has him on their fantasy team, right? Sidekick's got him, right? So we'll see. I mean, if Adrian Peterson suddenly winds up on the waiver wire, we'll know that Sidekick's had enough.
He already lost Arian Foster due to an injury. I don't know that he's ready to cash in on Peterson just yet.
Yeah, he's willing to make a big deal to me for Matt Forte. But
yeah.
Hey, I'm leading my division with a 3-4 record, so I can't very well. Wow, that's a that's an embarrassment. I'm embarrassed to even admit that. But anyhow,
you got a long season yet. We're only halfway. What do we have? 13 regular season games.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. We only have 6 games remaining. We only have 6 games remaining. Yeah.
Well, you're all right then. As long as you win your division, you're in the playoffs. Then it's all 0-0. As we've seen before, we've had many eights take out ones in our league.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, listen, don't I know
I think
know
you've
it.
Actually been on both sides of that, haven't
I've
you?
I've been on both sides of it. You're darn right.
Yeah, you've taken it. You've taken a one out as an eight and got taken out by an eight as a one. So, clearly that tells you all you need to know.
Nonetheless, take a look at, I mean, you know, all right, we'll keep the 75 yards in the mix for the discussion. Not a bad ground game from the standpoint of the Minnesota Vikings. They had 140 yards on the ground and receiving. Here we go, Brandon. Stephon Diggs, the new fantasy sleeper out there. Who the heck is Stephon Diggs?
Yeah, right. Just like the tight end from Cleveland nobody heard of till like 3 weeks ago.
Barnage.
That's it. Yeah, see, we still don't even know him.
right. We still don't know how to pronounce his name. 31-year-old who's been floating around the league for forever as a blocking tight end. Stephon Diggs right now is the new fantasy sleeper, wide receiver, rookie from Maryland this year. Let's see, when was he drafted? 5th-round draft pick, Brandon, for Stephon Diggs. Well, he had a heck of an afternoon leading the Minnesota Vikings in receiving yards, 6 receptions for 108 yards and a touchdown. So I'll have to go check real quick to see whether he's available. At the first moment I get a break, I'll check to see if he's available because I have a defense I need to dump. But anyhow, it's about time. Anyhow, let's take a look over.
Would it be them Philadelphia Eagles now, would it?
I think it might be. I think it just...
Uh-oh.
Over on the other side, Matt Stafford, poor Matt Stafford. I guess he's Let's see. Are they on a let me just check real quick. Are they? It would be good if they were on a bye this week, this coming week. No, they're not. Detroit's going to.
I think
end
they've
up,
already had their bye, actually. Now
oh,
that
they
I
have it. Okay.
You think about that? Yeah, I have Calvin Johnson. I had a. I think no, they haven't had their bye yet. They're 1-6, so they've played 7 games, so they have it coming still.
Matt Stafford is reeling right now as he's dealing with a new offensive coordinator because they fired their offensive coordinator in the wake of this game. I guess it would have been
a yearly event.
Really. I was going to say, this is what is this his fourth or fifth now offensive coordinator?
He's probably.
So he's reeling in a whole brand new system, I guess, that's going to be introduced. But Stafford, nonetheless, this past week. Well, I mean, he didn't throw any picks either. 18 to 26, 256 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. So, I mean, all right, not a horrible day. You know, I've been saying it all year long. The Lions befuddle me. I don't get it. I don't understand why.
Well, the Lions' problem is clearly in their lines on both offense and defense. They can't run the ball. Stafford's always running for his life on offense. And on defense, their defensive line is terrible. I mean, yeah, you might not say that based on, you know, the taking out the Adrian Peterson, but, you know, they put up over 100 yards rushing, you know, between all the runs, all the rushers. And, you know, I think that's the problem the Lions are going to have until they address it, and they need to address it through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they're going to fix this team. Is by, you know, their first and second picks for the next 3 years should be the linemen, period. Offense or defense. That's period. That's the end of the statement for the Lions. And they should do it really quick before guys like Stafford and Calvin Johnson are too old to do anything, you know, with, you know, good teammates. You know what I'm saying?
Matt Stafford has been sacked so far this season 16 times over 7 games. But at the same time, that still doesn't lead the league. The league right now is led by almost double that number. Russell Wilson has been sacked, Brandon, 31 times. Holy smokes.
Yeah, but that's not a fair stack because Russell Wilson doesn't stay put. He runs around a lot. And I think a lot of times running quarterbacks, because they try to run, if they don't make it back to the line, it counts as a sack. So that might be a misleading stat for like a Russell Wilson. You know, and I'd be interested for a guy like Stafford. How many times has he gotten hit that he just dumped the ball so he wouldn't get sacked? Because I think that's an important number. Because Stafford's not necessarily the most mobile quarterback.
Well, we know that he suffered with rib issues for at least 2 games this season.
Right.
That he played. He played with rib pain.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of a couple of hits that he took in games earlier in the season. But, yeah, I mean, there you have it. I mean, there go the Detroit Lions, now 1-6, and we just got done talking about the Minnesota Vikings, 4-2, and jumped themselves up to a healthy, what did I say, number eight in the power rankings. So, you know, you sit back with a team like Detroit, and I guess one of my questions for, you know, at any point during this evening of conversation, you know, when you're talking about teams like the Baltimore Ravens, the Tennessee Titans, the Detroit Lions, who are sitting here with just 1 win, you know, at this point, maybe they're 1-5 or 1-6 as Detroit is. What becomes your strategy for this from this point forward? Because, I mean, in all 3 of the cases, it doesn't appear that there's really any way. I'm just looking. I know Tennessee is probably – there's no way for Tennessee. Well, actually, there is a way for Tennessee. Tennessee's 1-5, but the Indianapolis Colts are 3-4. So they're still technically relevant. But when you got Baltimore at 1-6 and Cincinnati is 6-0, or you've got the Lions at 1-6 and they've got the Green Bay Packers at 6-0, what becomes your strategy? Tank it and get the number 1 pick?
I don't think tanking it's the answer. I think see what you got on your second and third string. You know, if you have young guys waiting in the wings, you know, you get them some game experience. That's what you do. You try to make them better for next year. And then on top of it, you know, your draft position will, you know, be according, of course, especially if you're playing guys who are rookies or second or third year guys. And, you know, then you'll be able to draft from there. I think that's the best thing you can do at this point. Playing a guy you have like a 10-year veteran playing guard on offense, you know, what good does it do, you know, if you're a 1-6 team at this point, to not see what the guy behind him can do? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that's the key to, you know, to teams like at this particular junction of the year. Teams like that need to see what they got on their depth chart, you know, so they know what they need to address next year. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe even, you know, I believe the trade deadline's coming up in a week or two, maybe three. I think it's early to mid-November. You know, maybe move a guy. You know, you move a veteran who could help somebody in a playoff run, and maybe pick up a young guy that might be, you know, a piece for you in the future. That's the kind, you know, that's the kind of thing you do as a, you know, 1-6 team at this point of the year. I know we don't see a lot of trades in the NFL, but you will see one occasionally. You know,
right.
I'm not saying a mega blockbuster trade. I'm talking like a 10-year veteran for a, you know, second or third string guy on another team, you know, who's young and has some upside. That kind of thing you'll see from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what I would do if I was a Lions. But, you know, the problem you have with teams like the Lions and I don't think the Ravens have traditionally been a badly managed team, but the Lions have not been a good, you know, great example of an NFL franchise. I mean, they've gone through GMs and coaches like, you know, everybody changes their clothes. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're constantly rotating through. So any decisions coming out of that front office, you'd have to question. I think the Ravens have a pretty good track record. Ozzie Newsome's done pretty well. Won them, you know, he's been part of two Super Bowl wins for the Ravens. So if I was a Ravens fan, seeing them, you know, making a few trades here and there, I wouldn't be upset. I mean, we've heard Steve Smith's name mentioned, and I saw it again today that, you know, our friends out there at Mile High Huddle said that they should be trading for Steve Smith. I mean, we've already heard the Ravens say, no, that ain't happening. And
well,
Steve Smith said he'd retire before he'd retire before he'd accept it. But, you know, that's the kind of thing teams like that need to do. You know, they need to move, you know, guys like that.
There
who
was
could be a good piece.
There was talk right here in the Philadelphia region, you know, could the Eagles potentially lure Steve Smith? But, you know, Smith himself coming out and being as adamant about it as he has been, you got to think that, you know, that may not happen. I don't know, or would not happen. I don't know.
I don't think it would happen. But what I do think, if they were open to it.
Any of these guys, I don't hear about it as frequently in the NFL as you do in Major League Baseball. Do players in the NFL have no trade clauses?
Well, as you remember, when Peyton Manning redid his deal this year, he got a no trade clause this year specifically because I think there was talk of, you know, the Broncos trying to move him. So they don't generally have no trade clauses in the NFL. That's why I think everybody saw that one so odd in Peyton's contract restructure that they added a no trade clause for only this season, which, you know, made really little to no sense. I think it was more of
he wanted it
as a trust factor based on the new coach and, you know, new regime. But yeah, the general rule, you don't see that in the NFL.
I think that's, I think that was also another indication to many of us out here that it was a signal that this more than likely is Peyton Manning's last year.
I would agree. I'm surprised that, honestly, I guess Peyton doesn't want the fanfare on the way out. So I guess that's why we're not hearing any announcement. But I can't imagine. Now, we'll see how he comes in off the bye. You know, if he's a little bit rejuvenated, you know, maybe, you know, he can squeak one more out. I don't know. But I don't see Peyton, you know, hanging around as a, you know, a backup carrying a clipboard. When he's done, he's going to be done. In other words, you know,
if he's
not capable of starting, he's done.
No, but I could see him not missing a single beat and actually being a coach, not a head coach, mind you, but some sort of a coach, a QB coach.
Yeah, then an offensive coordinator and
right.
work his way up. I agree. I think you're right.
Immediately.
I don't
next
know.
Year.
Here's the question. Is this what he wants to do? You know,
well, think,
we don't really
is.
Know.
I think it is.
Well,
and I think
hope.
That's why I think it is. And I think that's why, as you point out, we're not seeing the Derek Jeter type of farewell tour sort of thing. You know, I think that's
mm-hmm.
why you're not seeing it, because
well,
I think Peyton's
some players
thinking
don't
is,
like that.
Well, I think Peyton's thinking, you know, listen, I'm not going anywhere. I plan on staying right here in the NFL. You know, I'm just going to change my role. That's all I'm going to do. I won't be a guy, you know, I won't be putting the pads on, but I plan on being here. So.
Well, all I can say is I think you're right. I think Peyton has the tools to be a good coach in this league. He just is going to have to learn to let go. He can't be totally in control. Because that's the way he is right now. You can see he wants total control of his offense. And when you're a coach, you know, you got to let the players on the field have at least some control. As we saw early in the year, you know, it was kind of like a war between Kubiak and Peyton until they got, you know, their offense for the year squared away until they were both able to be comfortable with it. You know, I think Peyton could be the Kubiak of that situation with other quarterbacks, you know, as a coach.
It's a good observation. You're darn right. I could absolutely see that, you know.
Yeah.
And then somebody's
going to have to learn.
Yeah, somebody would have to sit him down and say, hey, wait a minute here, Peyton. Do you remember back when you were the guy? You know.
Yeah.
I still could see, you know, and you're pointing out, you know, well, we're going to take a look at this game at length, I guess, tomorrow night, Frat House Sports Show, that Green Bay – Denver Broncos game, which will be coming up on Sunday night. That should be an awesome, you know, end to the Sunday night viewing. But I could see Peyton Manning coming out. Let me put it this way. I'm not hoping it happens, but if it happens, if Peyton Manning comes out there and we continue to see the same type of performance that we have seen up to this point, I could see Kubiak stepping back in and saying, okay, enough with this experiment. Peyton, you're not running things any longer. We're taking it back over from the sideline. I could see that happening.
Well, I'll be honest with you. If they do that, that's a sign they're giving up on the year, in my book. You know,
well,
you can't – I don't think you can do that. I think you got to ride with what you got, you know. Let Peyton do what Peyton does. I don't think there's an in-between. At this point, you know what I mean? You're 6-0. You're going into Lambeau to play what a lot of people are going to say is the NFC side of the Super Bowl in Green Bay. If you lose, you don't panic. You just go with it because you're going to win the AFC West going away at this point. I don't think you mess with it. I don't think you want to start that war. I mean, because let's put it, we just said, I mean, it's probably his last year. The Broncos are going to be looking a lot different come next year,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think you want to, you know, they kind of push their chips in this year. I think you got to just, you know, play your hand, as they say in poker. You shove your chips to the middle, you play what you got. And I don't think that's a bad thing, honestly. I mean, you know, who knows what happens when you hit the playoffs? You know, anything can change. You can hit the right matchup, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I don't think that would be in Kubiak's best interest or the franchise. I think the franchise, you know, between Elway and, you know, upper management, I think this is what they decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, this is their last shot with Peyton for a Super Bowl. I don't think you change course again. Unless you're going to totally bag the season and go with Osweiler the rest of the way.
Right.
You know, that's the only way. That's the only way. I mean, there is no in between. Peyton gets his way, or he's done. One or the other.
And you're
there
probably,
is no in between.
You're probably right. At this moment, right now, when you're sitting 6-0, and as we just pointed out,
yeah.
only one of five teams that are unbeaten going into this point. Pragmatically,
yep.
It doesn't make any sense. Pragmatically, it doesn't make any. It would be suicide. It's suicidal.
Well,
so you leave it alone.
They have one of the best defense, yeah,
right.
In football, and they have a solid running game. You know, you could be looking at a Baltimore Ravens type Super Bowl win here, if they keep up what they're doing. So, you know, it's not what anybody expected, but, you know, a lot of people malign Trent Dilfer for that, you know, the early Super Bowl that he won, but because he wasn't the greatest quarterback, but he did it. He did his part, you know, on a team that had other pieces in place. And, you know, they had a Ray Lewis and Ed Reed on defense. And I believe Jamal Lewis was the running back at the time for the Trent Dilfer Super Bowl. And they had a good running game. So, you know, the Broncos could follow that mold right now if they were smart, you know, and try to play it out. I mean, yes, in the modern NFL, we don't see the defensive juggernaut, you know, win often. But it can happen. It can
anybody
happen.
Else
so
there,
you,
if anybody else wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. We're talking NFL. We're talking week 7 that just went by. And if there's anything on your mind, give us a holler here, 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can leave us a message in the Blog Talk Radio chat room right off of our page, or you can hit me up on Twitter at FratHouseMike. Before I jump off of the Detroit Lions completely, Brandon, and not to talk any further about the Minnesota Vikings and the Detroit Lions game, but just kind of generally, and you brought up the Baltimore Ravens. A couple of coaches that we've talked about, and there are more than these three that have been rumored could possibly be on the chopping block, hot seat. There are quite a few, actually, that could be on the hot seat. But a couple I wanted to bring up here real quick. Jim Caldwell, we just pointed out, woke up Monday morning to find himself with a new OC. I got to be honest, I don't know whether if the decision to release the OC was Jim Caldwell's or whether that was a general manager decision. For all I know, that could have been Jim Caldwell's decision to make. I don't know. Because
as a general rule, don't the head coach fire the assistant coaches as a general rule?
Well, sure.
So if he woke up not – yeah, I don't know that was necessarily his choice.
Well, no, yeah, but what I'm saying is we don't – I'm not saying it wasn't his decision. I'm not saying it wasn't. It may have been. I don't know. All we know is that the OC was removed from his position. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Caldwell, if I'm not – correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Caldwell more of a defensive – he's a defensive coach. He's not an offensive coach, I don't believe. So
yeah, I think you're right. I think he was – wasn't he the defensive coordinator for Dungy during all the Colts' major runs? I believe he, and then he went, yeah, he was the defensive coordinator. So, yeah, he's a defense guy.
Right. So it's very possible that Caldwell pulled the trigger on this one and said, that's it, I've had enough of this. And maybe he was the one. But you got to think that even if it was Caldwell, you know, regardless of what the circumstances were, whether it was Caldwell who actually pulled the trigger or whether it was the general manager who stepped in and said, that's enough, Jim, we're making a change here. You know, it's either you or him. Let's go. And, of course, you know, it was the OC. Regardless of who it was, it's a desperation move, obviously, and it would be one that would indicate that Caldwell certainly has to be the number one coach right now on the hot seat for potential replacement come the end of the season, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would agree. Him and Chuck Pagano. I saw the article you sent over from USA Today, and I definitely agree with him and Pagano. The other seven on that list, you could make an argument as to why they shouldn't be on the hot seat. But those two, I think it's pretty much a given. You know, Caldwell's just had his – I think this is his second or third shot at a head coach. He's probably, you know, going to be a defensive coordinator the rest of his career. I mean, I think it's just, you know, he's not head coaching material, as they say. You know, Pagano, this is his first shot as a head coach. I could see him getting another shot somewhere. I think he's kind of getting a raw deal because if you read a lot of that team, they have a lot of infighting between the GM, Grigson, and him. They don't get along as well as they should. And I think you know, other NFL franchises could look at that and say, hey, you know what, this Colts mess isn't all his fault. You know, he's doing the best with what he has.
I think the Colts have made some very, very serious strategic personnel mistakes.
I agree with you.
In the past couple of seasons. Skill position players that they knew they needed to replace that didn't get replaced either by virtue of free agency or by draft.
Or they thought they were replacing them with aged veterans like Gore and Andre Johnson, who aren't necessarily living up to what they thought.
Or Ahmad Bradshaw.
Ahmad Bradshaw they actually just brought back, and I thought he actually kind of looked good considering it was his first game back.
But we know the history here that this is the oldest team right now in the entire league, average-wise. So the question becomes how much blame can you really put? And see, this is where I step back on this one and I go, I don't know. I mean, really, you know, I guess maybe if I'm hearing you correctly, maybe I'm hearing you say the same thing. I mean, are we really going to blame Pagano that much for what's going on down or out there in Indianapolis? I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily fair.
I agree with you 100%. I think the decisions made on personnel, I think, are as much to blame. I mean, because let's face it, they don't have the best offensive line out there in Indianapolis, you know, in the trenches, as they say, on offense and defensive lines. I think they could do a better job maybe through the draft or, you know, not so much, you know, free agency. I think when you build your lines, you gotta do that through the draft. I think that's the best way to do that kind of thing.
Yep. Yep.
So I think that's maybe, and you know,
well,
that guy,
what's his name?
Irsay out there.
The running back position as well. I think you have to go through the draft. I mean, yes, you can occasionally get lucky with the free agency, but if you're sharp enough, and look, I realize the Colts have been a pretty good team. So maybe their draft position wasn't all that ideal, but for gosh sakes, you could pick up a running back in the second round. That would be better than what they currently have right now.
teams that are hurting on line position like they are shouldn't be drafting a running back before the fourth or fifth round. Look at some of the guys that are like top guys right now. I mean, Deion Lewis up in New England has made his way around the league, you know, as a journeyman. Justin Forsett in the Ravens. And these guys are some of your top backs right now. I don't know that running backs – I mean, even C.J. Anderson for the Broncos, I don't believe he was a high draft pick. He may have even been undrafted. You know, it's just a matter of finding the right guy in the right system. I mean, they plugged Forsett in there down in the Ravens, and he just took off. And Deion Lewis up in New England until he got this – I mean, I guess he got hurt a little bit, got dinged up. But, I mean, he's been insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a matter of finding the right guy in the right system. I mean, even look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They got DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews this past year. Matthews is a better fit. You can see it just by watching.
Yeah.
I think it's just a matter of finding the right guy for the right, you know, fit of the offense. And I think DeMarco Murray just is not a – he's a good kind of grunt guy. If you got a line like Dallas has, you know, they can – you a guy like Murray can run. The Eagles do better with Matthews who can – you know, catch the little screen pass and is a little more creative in his running than Murray.
And has the burst of speed.
Yes.
Which Murray does not have.
No.
But sticking with the coaching thing.
The only way McMurray's burst is in a straight line, where Ryan Matthews has burst side to side, too.
Yes,
I think
exactly.
That's the difference.
Exactly.
I think Murray, because we actually were watching the Eagles game, and there was one or two runs where Murray busted up through the middle and did show a little bit of speed. But he doesn't have it laterally, side to side. I think that's the difference.
And when you see those plays, they are not designed. Those are Murray doing Murray. Honest to God.
Right.
I mean,
somebody blocking for him really well for a change.
With all due respect, somebody, and I thought it was an outstanding analysis, observation, I guess it might have been yesterday on one of the talk radio programs I was listening to, made the comment, you know, after last season, what did we hear? The complaint from Chip Kelly was, we need a downhill runner. We need a downhill runner. You know, and that the complaint was that McCoy was too east and west. Well, they get a downhill runner in Murray, and what do they start employing? They start employing sweep plays. The plays are not designed. They haven't given him a play that's north and south.
Yeah, you're right.
So it doesn't make any stinking sense. You know, one thing comes out of his mouth, that is Kelly's, on one hand, and says, this is what we need. On the other hand, he's not employing what he knows he's got. So it doesn't make it, don't get me started. It just frustrates me to death. Real quick, the Ravens head coach, John Harbaugh, New Orleans Saints head coach, Sean Payton, both have been rumored to be on the hot seat. Both have Super Bowl victories. I don't know what to make of either one of them. Second year in a row, and look, you and I have talked about it. We've talked about it on the Frat House Sports Show. The Saints are a team that we have watched now, I guess going back to post-Bounty Gate, that have kind of slowly deteriorated before our eyes. And they haven't seemed to been able to rebound from it. The Baltimore Ravens seemingly kind of have gone through a similar situation following their Super Bowl win, I guess it was now three seasons ago. They haven't seemed to have recovered. You know, a point that was made the other evening on, I guess it was on Monday night during that Ravens game, that Joe Flacco right now is not none of the skill position players on his offense are the same guys that were there 3 years ago with that Super Bowl team. Not a single one of them. Are either one of these guys truly in trouble, Sean Payton or John Harbaugh, in your opinion?
The only way I see either one getting fired is if they do a total clean house. In other words, in New Orleans, Robbie Loomis, the GM, would have to go, and Ozzie Smith, Ozzie Smith, the GM, in Baltimore would have to go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I honestly, no. I don't think either should. I think both should be given the opportunity to rebuild their teams. As you said, they both have had semi-recent Super Bowls. Like the Saints are going back 3 or 4 years now. But I think it's time that, you know, I think you got to give, you know, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, head coach rather, you know, an opportunity to build a new team. Look at teams, and I can point to the perfect example, and that would be Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh doesn't change their coach very often. They give their coach, if they find a good one, and I don't think the current coach, I don't think he's won a Super Bowl yet, but he's done well enough that, you know, he's gotten them there. So you know, they're not too quick to, you know, pull the trigger and let's just blow this up and start over again. Too many franchises do that. They don't get continuity. I think it's to both Baltimore and New Orleans' best interest is to give these two guys, you know, another year or two, you know, see how it goes. New Orleans is going to get tough because Breeze is towards the end of his career. They're going to have to start looking towards a new quarterback, and their defense is already terrible. They need to rebuild that side of the ball. Yep. So, you know, that job's a little tougher in New Orleans. Harbaugh still has a lot of time yet with Flacco. And as you pointed out, you know, nobody else from the Super Bowl is left, so they can build new pieces around him. I think they got a good running back and four set. You know, their receivers aren't bad, but I think this is already – Steve Smith announced this is his last season. So, you know, they're going to have to do something there. And, you know, that's another team that needs to rebuild the other side of the ball is the defense. Yeah. And I think you give – I don't think the Ravens are as far away as the Saints. I think the Ravens – even though right now the Saints have a better record, I think the Ravens are closer to being good again, not as far away from being good again as – the Saints are.
I agree with you because I don't see the wide scale need the way I do with the Saints. I don't see it on the Ravens.
But I think even though the Saints need a lot of work, I still think Payton has done a good enough job that he deserves the opportunity to keep his job. This is my opinion. We've seen this before where, you know, hasty decisions lead to, you know, like, example, when the Bears jettisoned Lovie Smith, I think everybody thought that was a bad decision. And what have they done since then? We're, what, on the second coach since him? So, I mean, I don't think Lovie Smith was doing a bad enough job to deserve to get, you know, fired from the Bears. And I think the Bears have suffered from that.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of these teams, and I think the Colts are going to suffer if they do get rid of Pagano. because it clearly looks like, you know, him and Gregson are in a power struggle, and Gregson's clearly winning, you know, based on some of these, you know, personnel decisions. I think the Colts are going to suffer from it, personally. I think they went the wrong way there.
I was just trying to look this one up because I think Mike Tomlin, I believe, did win one of those Super Bowls with
Roethlis.
Yeah, I'm almost positive he did.
Okay, well, then there you go. That even furthers, you know, the point. Yeah, I guess he did. He would have won one. Didn't,
yeah.
I guess he won one with Cowher at the beginning of his career and then the second. Doesn't Roethlisberger have two?
Roethlisberger has two, yes. Roethlisberger has two.
Yeah, so I think he has probably one with each coach.
My Frat House Sports is NFL poll of the evening, poll question of the evening, if anybody wants to jump in on that one, is the question that I just posed to Brandon. Will the Saints, Sean Payton, or Ravens, John Harbaugh, be fired? If you want to jump in and participate in that question, you can look me up, catch me over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That was just tweeted out. Looking at the clock, Brandon, let me move things around here a little bit. Let's jump it over to taking a look at the let's take a look at that Miami Dolphins game just for the fun of it. Because it's very, very funny. Suddenly, Dan Campbell, the new interim head coach of the Miami Dolphins, has kind of become like a cult hero. People are talking about him like as if he's the, and almost kind of tongue-in-cheek. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but there are actually YouTube videos and out there and what have you singing the praises of Dan Campbell. This was his first game, I believe, right? This was his first game since taking over because they were on a bye, I think, the week that Joe Philbin was removed as the head coach of the Dolphins. So in his first win, the Miami Dolphins, they beat the Houston Texans pretty good, 44-26. But the score doesn't even tell the full story because let's get it. Understand this one. It was 41-0 at halftime, 41-0. Ryan Tannehill, this is absolutely perfect, right? This is a perfect QB rating. Ryan Tannehill was 18 of 19, 282 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 158.3 QB rating. 41-0. Later on, we got to see, really, Matt Moore. Yeah, I didn't even know he was still in the league anymore. Yeah, they pulled Tannehill. There wasn't much point to having him in there. Jarvis Landry was on fire. Oh, man. You remember I had this guy on my fantasy team last year? Yeah, I don't have him there this year. Wish I did. Boy, what a day he had. 5 receptions, 83 yards, 2 touchdowns. And one of those was a 50-yard reception, which was – listen, make no mistake, that was all yards after reception because I remember seeing that one. He just took off. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible performance. I guess, you know, look, the defense let them back in a little bit. I guess it's kind of tough to keep your let's see, I'm just looking at this. Miami defense did have a pick six touchdown themselves. The touchdowns came every which way you could possibly imagine. 4 in the air. Let me see. 1 on the ground and 1 by the defense. So there are your touchdowns. I guess it's natural for the defense to let down a little bit when you're up 41-0 at the half. So Houston comes back and puts 26 up on them in the second half of the game. Brian Hoyer, 23 of 49, 273 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception on the opposite side, on the Houston side, 76.3 QB rating. What do you make of the fact that Houston dumped Ryan Mallett this week? Was that necessary?
Well,
what's the point?
Well, he missed the team's flight to
Miami.
Is that what it was? Yeah, and this is after earlier in the year.
Oh, I didn't know the detail on this.
I'm
usually up on this sort of thing.
He's essentially throwing a fit that, you know, Hoyer's a starter over him. And, you know, earlier in the year when it was announced, he magically missed a practice And, you know, the team said he overslept. Yeah, that was later refuted as a, you know, a BS story. And he got stuck in traffic when everybody else from the Houston Texans organization made the flight. So, you know, that's why he was shown the door.
So Ryan Mallett essentially got his passport to the CFL.
Well, yes and no. I don't know about that. He might end up on another an NFL roster. We'll see. He's got some tools. He's actually not a bad quarterback.
He better get his ego in check, I think.
Well,
that's
funny. I read an article today about it. You know, a team like, because he was with the Patriots before, and he was never a problem here because he knew his role. He was never going to start over Tom Brady, and he knew that. You know, down there, he was expecting to be the starter, and he lost out to another guy, and he couldn't deal with that.
Yeah.
So in the right situation, I think he could thrive. Here's the best part for Tannehill. Part of the same story I read, he gets $2.5 million for the rest of the year from the Texans and whatever he signs if he signs with somebody else. So he gets like a double paycheck on his way out the door.
Yeah, I read his parting gifts were quite nice. Yeah, he got
You know what? A team like the Patriots, too, you know, could take that veteran. I mean, let's face it, Jimmy Garoppolo looked underwhelming in his preseason shots this year. He never really lit it up. You know, and if you want to have some confidence down the stretch, a guy like Ryan Mallett, who could come right in, might not be a bad choice for a team like that. And he never was an issue in New England with some of this, you know, discipline type stuff. So
yeah, I gotta be honest. I've not been terribly impressed with this Bill O'Brien over in Houston at all. And for all of the brouhaha that he got, you know, there he was. He went and he held Penn State up hostage for a year. Goes over there for 1 year to get himself a look-see over with the NFL, and ends up with the Texans. I kind of thought, okay, well, wait a minute. Maybe this will be the guy that's going to kind of turn things around. Well, we're in the third year, are we not? Isn't this the third year for O'Brien? And the guy just, you know, the guy strikes me. It doesn't surprise me that he's got issues with quarterbacks being disgruntled, because the guy strikes me as being wishy-washy. He can't seem to make up his mind. I mean, he doesn't seem to have a backbone. That's the impression I get. I don't know whether you come away with the same kind of gut feeling about the guy or not. But that's the impression I get, is that this team always never seems to have a direction. They don't exactly know what it is they're doing. And I think that by the time you get to, and again, I'm asking, I'm not sure if, or I think we're in year three with him.
I think it's two, I believe.
Is it two?
I think this is the second full year.
I was thinking Joe Franklin. Now let me think. No, you're probably right. Okay, that would be right. Because Hackenberg over at Penn State is in his third year, and his first year, his freshman year, was under Bill O'Brien. All right, so these past two seasons are under Joe Franklin. Okay, so you're right. But nonetheless, I still kind of felt that this program, this Houston Texans program, would have been a little further along. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you know, I know the last season there with Kubiak wasn't horrendous because they had all the problems there with the quarterback over there. What's his name? Matt Schaub. Yeah, Matt Schaub and all the mess that was going on with that one a number of seasons ago. So I know that the last season wasn't terrific under Kubiak and all of the kind of static that was going on there. But if I recall correctly, Brandon, there was a season or two with Kubiak and Schaub where this team was close to the top of the division. And it would have been like the season before that or the season even before that one. So I kind of thought this team would be – I thought they would have gotten their act together by now. But what do you make of I don't know. Everybody's ready to say well, Dan Campbell, look at what he did. He really turned this thing around. Way too early, right? This could have just been a fluke. This could have been the new car smell sort of thing, as I like to say.
Yeah, possibly. We'll see. I mean, you know, like you said, it's the first week. coming off a bye against a bad team. Let's see what they do tomorrow night against New England. You know, let's see if they have, you know, can keep it competitive, you know, and keep up what they started, you know, this past week against the Texans. I mean, the Texans, I think, are just generally a bad team. They were supposed to have a pretty good defense, but, you know, what's his name? Mario Williams can't seem to stay healthy down there. Clearly the Patriots did the right thing not signing Wentz Vilfort because he ain't doing anything down in Houston. So, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see the Dolphins, you know, get some – if Campbell's the man, let's see it over a couple of weeks and against some better competition than the Houston Texans.
Well,
so, you know, we'll see. It'll be on tomorrow night. That's the nice thing about Thursday night football. It gives you the opportunity to, you know, take a good look at it, as they say.
I'll tell you, all you got to do is Google – Dan Campbell's name or the Miami Dolphins in the past week, look up articles in the past week and you will see the incredible number of columns and articles and bloggers that are putting out the notice now. Dan Campbell has turned the season around. All right. Yeah, I'm like you, Brendan. We'll wait and see, wait and see. Boy, oh boy, though, I will say this. One more kudo out to a Dolphin there. How about Lamar Miller, 14 carries, 175 yards? We hadn't heard Lamar Miller. We hadn't heard from Lamar Miller in I think it was about three seasons, right? They were looking for
him. Well, he actually had some games last year. He had a couple. He had some decent stuff, but, hey, you know, you're talking to me. I don't like the Dolphins. Give me a chance.
I know. They were but the last I heard, they were looking for Lamar Miller in the in the team cafeteria, they couldn't find him. So I don't know. But they found him on Sunday, for 175 yards. You're talking about the New England Patriots. Let's go over and take a look at that because last week they had to play the New York Jets. And, you know, here was a game, you know, we were talking about this one. New England favored by 9. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, if it's Jets, New England, if it is New England, Buffalo, and the spread is double digit, don't take it, folks. Do not. I don't care when it is. I don't care if it's this year, last year, the year before, next year. I don't care if it's 2020. Don't take that line. It's not going to be that way. And it wasn't that way. New England was favored by 9. They got out of there with a 7-point win. 30-23, and at one point actually, I'm just looking at this real quick. 14-17, they were down, weren't they? They were down 17-16 going into the fourth quarter. The New England Patriots were fits. They just have fits with them. Honest to God, look at Brady. 54 times we had to put it in the air. Ground game? Nah, there wasn't one. There wasn't a ground game at all. Why even?
Well, that's because Deion Lewis is hurt, I think. I don't think they had a game plan focused around Blunt yet. I think that's the difference there with the running game.
I'd say not. I mean, he had 3 carries for minus 3 yards, LeGarrette Blunt.
Mm.
9 carries, 16 yards on the ground. That was it. Gronkowski, automatic. There's a touchdown. Amendola had a touchdown. Julian Edelman had 54 yards. So it was the usual Tom Brady performance. As I said, 34 of 54, 355 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. And I guess over on the other side, the Jets did what they had to do. They put up a fight. They did their best. Fitzpatrick was as he always is. He's serviceable. He's a serviceable backup quarterback. You know, that's why he continues to stay employed from one team to the next. He just goes out and he's okay. He's nothing to write home about, but he does the job. But honest to God, it is just so, I'm telling you, it is so amusing to watch the New England Patriots have to play anybody inside their own division because you got to know it's always going to come down to, and what did I do? Of course, I took the Jets against the line. Because I've learned I've learned with the New England Patriots, if they're playing against anybody inside their own division and that line is that big, don't take it. I took the Jets against the line, and technically that was one of the only games I won all this past weekend. Now, look, they got to play against, you know, you're just bringing it up. They got to play against their own division tomorrow night. Do you anticipate it being, you know, because I'm just looking at the line. Let me see here. The line for tomorrow is 8. New England is favored by 8. This is a game in New England. Now, let's see, that game last week, was that in New England or was that on the road? That was
yes,
in New England.
Yes, that was in New England, yes.
Yeah, that was in New England as well. So they're hosting back-to-back. They're hosting division rivals. They had the Jets last week. They've got Miami this week. You got a four-day break, four-day rest for for both teams, I guess, for both the Patriots and the Dolphins going into this game. What do you think on this one? We're not gonna pick this game tomorrow night anyhow. So, I mean, you anticipate this one being close, like a lot of times Patriots AFC East games are.
Yes, I do. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. It never is, as you pointed out with the AFC, you know, East matchups. It always is. But I will say this: the Patriots have, I believe, they're at home, so it's two games in a row at home against division rivals. So I don't expect them to lose. I don't see this as like a trap game, or you know, because you're talking, you know, two division, you know, rivals. So I don't expect them to lose the game. I think they'll win. It'll probably be closer than I would like, you know, as a Patriots fan. But I don't expect it to be a blowout by either side. Let's put it that way.
I just brought it up before. If suddenly Miami has found if suddenly they have found Lamar Miller, if suddenly they have found their ground game, does that in any way concern you that, you know, there's an element there that Miami will be bringing at the Patriots that the Patriots can't counter themselves? Because, you know, we talk about the Patriots, it seems like season after season after season, Brandon, that's one of the things that's always lower on their priority list is the ground game.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think they like to have certain style of backs. I mean, Shane Vereen went out, now we got Deion Lewis. Shane went, you know, via free agency to the Giants. So I think they LeGarrette Blount's been a pretty, you know, consistent piece for them. You know, Jonas Gray kind of was the same mold as Blount, and when Blount came back, that was the end of Gray. So I think they kind of have, you know, an idea, and depending on who they play, you'll see different guys, you know, come in. And I just don't think they had a matchup for the Jets and their running backs without Lewis. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, LeGarrette Blount always goes off against the Colts. If they're playing the Colts, you know LeGarrette Blount's going to touch the ball, and he's going to hurt them, and he did a couple weeks ago. That's just the way the Patriots are. And I think Deion Lewis being out changed their game plan, especially in the running game last week. And, you know, they made up for it in other areas,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, from what I'm hearing, I don't think Deion Lewis is going to be, you know, good to go by tomorrow. I think he needs another week to recover. It's always sketchy with the Patriots. You never know because they're, you know, Belichick's just such a giving coach when it comes to injury information. But from what I'm reading, it doesn't sound like Lewis is going to be good to go. So I think we're going to – either they'll have a different type of game plan for the running game, you know, focused on Blount, or they'll throw the ball again. Because clearly, James White, I have no idea why he's still on the Patriots roster. This is his third or fourth year. He's been given opportunity after opportunity, and when he does, he either fumbles or doesn't produce. Why is he still on the team? I don't know what Belichick sees in him, but he is.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this is his last year.
What are the terms of his contract? My goodness.
Well, he was a rookie, so he's still playing under his rookie deal.
Then that's what the deal is. He's you know, come on. It's called economics. That's what that was about then. Yeah.
I guess, but he doesn't really do anything unless he's doing something on special teams that we're not seeing or something. He doesn't really contribute to the whole, which, guys like that tend to not stay in New England. They got to have some kind of role to hang around. I don't know why, he seems to hang around when others don't. That's just an observation from my point of view. Another one who falls into that is Dobson. Why is he still on this team? The wide receiver, Aaron Dobson. I have no idea why he's still on the New England Patriots. He doesn't do anything, yet he still manages to, hang in there. So, that's just observations, I guess.
Brandon LaFell was thrown to 8 times last week. It caught a whopping total of 2 of them. So LaFell had a little case of the dropsies.
It was his first game back. Come on, give him a game or two to get into flow. Mm-hmm. He got to get his rhythm. He had he started the year on the PUP list, so he's...
Well, sure.
What I found odd about him being activated was that he didn't have any, a few weeks of practice till they put him back in. He came back and was eligible. This is his first week he was eligible to be added. He could have practiced with the team for 2 or 3 weeks before they had to activate him. And they didn't go that route.
Wait, this is surprising you? Wait a minute. This is Belichick, man. It goes to the whole concept of, look, let's get it straight. Was Brandon LaFell really PUP the entire time?
Well, probably not, but they had to make the call at the beginning of the year.
Right. Exactly. So, We know how this game is played, particularly when it comes to the way that they manipulate the roster over there. I'm not criticizing him. He's probably better at manipulating it than he is. Go ahead.
He was probably at a 3 to 4 week injury.
Right.
And Belichick probably surmised, it's better to give him up for the first 6 weeks than tie up a roster spot for 3 or 4, maybe 5, and they just weighed the options, and that's how it played out. Other teams do that. Everybody does that at the beginning of the year. You don't want to waste roster spots when you know you're not going to have a guy for X amount of time when you have that, PUP as an option, because that's not an option once the season starts.
Absolutely right. I mean, you don't want a guy holding up a roster spot for 4, particularly when you're talking about the first 4 weeks of the season. Listen, if it's, if you're nearing the end of the season, all right, that might be a little bit different situation. Now you've got a big lead on the entire division. But look, you're opening up the season, you're going to hold up a roster spot. This guy's probably going to be out for 3 weeks of those, maybe 4 of those. All right, put him on the PUP. Because we can't afford to have that position held up. No, it's a smart move. It comes down to economy, right? It's economy. That's economics. So that's just smart. That's just a smart move. But they're probably putting the bug in his ear. Somebody is. Hey, Brandon, you better be ready to rock and roll. First notice we tell you you're off. So if you're capable of getting out there and training on your own, well, you make sure you're out there doing whatever you can. I'm sure
he did. It's probably just, getting into the game rhythm. They always say no matter what, the practice speed is never at game speed. They always need everybody, it seems, needs a game or two to come back from an injury, when they come back. Very few guys just step in like nothing changed. You know what I mean? That's my point. And I think you'll see a different Brandon LaFell this week even. Just having 1 week of game, I think he'll look a lot better even this week. They need him because he's their receiver that has a little bit of size. They got Edelman and Amendola, who are essentially, the same guy with a little bit different skill sets. I think Amendola is a little quicker on the speed burst and can get the deep ball, where I think Edelman can get open, 15, 20 yards downfield he's your possession type receiver who can go up for the ball and come down with it. So they need him. Exactly. So I think they've tried to get Dobson in that role because he's a bigger guy, but he just can't seem to. I don't know. Maybe he's just not that good. I don't know. But you know, LaFell being back is a big plus. You know, even though he did drop a few this week, I think you'll see a different LaFell as the season goes. I believe you had him on your fantasy team last year and did pretty good for you too.
Yeah, I did. I did. I put him on late in the season, and I think I rode the rest of the season out with him. You know, had him starting numerous times, so I actually was pretty pleased with him. It took him a little while to get going into the season. That's what I found.
Yes, but, and I think you'll see the same thing this year, especially because he started the way he did.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got my clock. This timer is not right. I already know that because it. But it's because it's not synced correctly. But we got about 7 minutes here real quick. We'll take just a couple of moments here, Brandon, real fast, and then we'll have to wrap it up for the evening. But another interdivision game that took place last week, one over in the NFC least. I said least, yes. The Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants. Giants won that game, which took them to 4-3, sole possession right now of first place in the NFC East, 27-20 over the Dallas Cowboys. A ground game coming from the Giants. They put 132 yards on the ground. They had a touchdown from Darqua. Eli Manning was okay, 13-24, 170 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. There was a defensive touchdown from the Giants. So that helped him out. Matt Cassel was horrible. Now, you know, a lot of people thought, okay, it was a matter of time before they were going to jump over to Matt Cassel. I kind of thought it myself. I'm thinking, okay, Matt Cassel, ultimately they're going to go to Matt Cassel. That's who they're going to go to. Three interceptions. You stick with him, right, Brennan? You're going to stick with him. I mean, if you're the Cowboys, you're not going back, right? You're going to stick with him until Roma comes back. Because
you kind of made the bed, you know, you put Whedon on the bench.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody thought Whedon did that bad of a job either. I personally didn't think he did all that horrible of a job.
Mm-hmm.
But and you know, Matt Cassel, I'm not trying to make him out to be anything all that special, but you know, the dude just came from, you know, they traded from Buffalo to get him. He had like a week and a half to learn the playbook. I can't imagine that he's a better option than Whedon at this point, but clearly the Cowboys thought it was.
Matt Cassel went 17-27, 227 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions, three. And one of those, as I pointed out, was a pick six from the Giants defense. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Darren McFadden, 29 carries, 152 yards, and a touchdown. Holy smokes. Somebody did well in the fantasy league, didn't they now? That is if he wasn't on somebody's bench, for God's sake. Because
Joseph Randall, who's been their primary back, got hurt very early in the game.
Yep.
He may be out for a week or two, so you know, that's something the Cowboys are going to have to deal with. You know, luckily, you know, it's proving the point that, you know, Murray and, you know, anybody can run behind this line in Dallas. Dallas has clearly an offensive line built for the running game. And they can clearly, you know, it doesn't matter. You plug in Darren McFadden, yep, big game. Randall's been having big games all year, you know. They're going to get a boost, too, because Dez Bryant's close to coming back. He's been in practice now for the last couple of weeks. When he does come back, he's going to give that team a little shot in the arm. I don't care who's quarterback. I don't care if it's Cassel or Whedon. You know, just having Dez back is going to open up, you know, some of the other guys, you know, because they're going to have to pay more attention to Dez Bryant once he's on the field. I think that's just going to help the offense as a whole. Whether or not, you know, he's a big factor right away, you know, is kind of irrelevant. He's going to draw some coverage, more coverage, you know, off some of the other guys. So I think it's going to help. I think Dallas, you're going to see a little surge out of before Romo gets back, probably.
Dallas right now, though, finds themselves in the basement. Now, it's not insurmountable. There's only two games different. Actually, really only one game different, I guess, because Dallas is 2-4, and the Giants are 4-3, so the Giants have yet to go on their bye. So right now you got the Giants at 4-3, Washington and Philadelphia at 3-4, and then Dallas at 2-4. So it's not, I mean, you know, nobody's out of this one at this point. Right now the NFC East, there's nobody out of this. It's wide open. This is for anybody to take at this point. It's going to depend on who wants it. Now, Washington and Philadelphia are on the bye this week. The Giants are in New Orleans. And where the heck are the Dallas Cowboys? The Dallas Cowboys are hosting Seattle. So, not looking good, I guess. Although, I don't know. You don't know what you're getting from one week into the next with Seattle. Because offensively, they're sporadic. I don't know what to expect from Seattle, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, if Dallas gets the ground game going, they could just as easily win that game, I suppose.
I agree. There's no sure thing in that game.
No.
This whole division, as you just said, is up in the air. I don't think the Giants are that good, but yet they're clearly in the driver's seat. I think the Eagles blew a perfect opportunity last week to, you know, kind of make a statement and take control of the division, and they blew that. So who knows? I don't know where this division is going to end up at this point. We'll have to just wait and see.
I think we know this much. There will not be a wild card out of the NFC East this year. That we know. There will be
That's
no wild
card.
That's
a safe statement.
You've got to
win.
Well,
we know one's coming out of the South for sure. You got to think between the, you know, the Panthers and Falcons, they're both playing pretty good football.
God bless them, because that was a division last year that, you know, the winner shouldn't have gotten into the playoffs. Let's get that one straight. So the Panthers, what were they? 7-8-1, right? Was that what it was?
Yeah, I think they were actually, because they had a tie. Yeah, they were a slight loser making the playoffs.
I think they were 7-8-1. So, you know how I feel about that kind of silliness. Anyhow. There you have it, folks. We've gotten around to at least some of the stuff. I mean, we could go probably for, if we wanted to, we could go for another, I'm sure another couple hours easily, but, at least we got through to a couple of the big, big things that are going to be impacting what you're going to be taking a look at this coming week. As I pointed out, as week 8 begins tomorrow evening, we've got, Miami and New England, as Brandon just pointed out. Many thanks to everybody that's been listening in this evening. We appreciate it. Make sure you're here with us tomorrow evening for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, coming to you live right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. What's on the agenda? I have no idea at this moment. I know we'll be doing our picks of the week.
How about 4 minutes of football? Are we doing that?
What's that now?
4 minutes of football? Are we doing that?
Of course we are.
Of course
we are. Of course we're doing 4 minutes of football, but then we've got, then we have another 116 minutes to fill.
156.
60 and 60, right? 60 and 60 is 120.
Oh, you're right. Forget it. Ignore me. I'm trying to make the show 3 hours. Jesus, don't listen to me.
Don't do that, please. 216th show. Trust me, we've never been at a loss for words, so... you want to be here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You want to be here on Friday night with Nick Swartz and Caleb and myself, and we'll be going over, and Bobby G as well, and we'll be going over what's happening in fantasy football. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and then Saturday afternoon, I'll be here with you, 2 p.m. Eastern Time for our relaxed Frat House Saturday afternoon, Frat House Saturday program, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. But hey, first things first, tomorrow night, Frat House Sports Show, number 216, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Be here for that one. A real quick update, New York Mets, Kansas City Royals, 0-0, and I believe we're still in the second inning, bottom of the second inning. So there you go. That's your update on what's happening in the World Series. In the meantime, well, football's coming tomorrow night. Make sure you get out there and enjoy that tomorrow night. In the meantime, tonight, get out there and enjoy the World Series. Catch you tomorrow night.